Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. As usual, we are here from 4 to 6, but from 4 to 7, but every Monday, you know, we have to start with the first hour, that's 4 to 5, is all dedicated to giving you, property investment advice. And, you had the advice, Omaruru is having a lot of potential. And
was that the only thing you heard of?
and the lack of bachelor units in Windhoek.
That's core knowledge. We've cited it as well.
So you'll just assume that everyone is gonna be loaded to afford your fancy properties.
Here's the worst part, Helmut. Yeah. When we obviously look at the discussion around new properties being brought up.
Yeah.
Francina last week went to another particular sort of like a showcasing of a alternative building materials for a home, for new homes.
Yeah.
The broader concern obviously that also emanated from that discussion was how do people actually access these new construction materials?
Yeah.
Another scenario was what you and I have also spoken about in many scenarios. We've spoken about the modular homes. We've spoken about the alternative materials. Something popped up in my radar. Just trying to think back to it. Yeah, the question that I just asked Francisco now, just at the end, in terms of should the Namibian government make a same particular step in terms of citing, listen, don't speculate on a property price.
Mm-hmm.
A home is for living. If it's a residential home, or if it's a residential property, it's meant for one use.
Yeah.
It's not meant for the use of speculating or using as a business approach or which way or what way ever. Because you have scenarios that exist that are set in stone. For example, there is a minimum wage legislation set in stone for contractors and affiliate artisans who have to work on a construction site to build a house.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. This is the catch. This is the disclaimer. This was a minimum wage agreement between the Construction Industries Federation. I've interviewed Madam Berbel Kirshner here in studio back in 2024 about specifically, you know, looking at the construction industry. That agreement is between companies or construction companies who are affiliated with the Construction Industries Federation of Namibia, CIF, and obviously with the... What's the office in the Ministry of Labour? The Labour Commissioner.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's the correct office. But anyway, so you can have a minimum wage agreement, but it's whether or not there are contractors that are affiliated to the CIF of Namibia. Because the CIF stepped forward as an association, this collective group of, you know, contractors, construction contractors. You obviously know what's the price of sand, the price of a cement bag, the price of, you know, all the needed equipment and tools and the likes that you would have and you can anticipate to be on the site, right?
Yeah.
The downside has been, Francisco cited it, is where is the over-speculation? Where does the price, you know, that is suddenly, you can know how much bricks you would need. You can know how much cubic centimeters of sand you would need. You would know,
depending,
can calculate
the size of the structure.
You can, all that, because you will have a plan, obviously, to work with. Definitely. So you'll know what's the size of the structure.
Yeah.
That plan will obviously be designed by a architect like Francisco himself. And, you know, you'll have all those things in order, all those ducks will be ready to go and
making
ready to
everything
quack.
Predictable.
Yeah. That's the moment when you get to the labor agreement, to the labor discussion.
Yeah.
Specifically in some scenarios, I have seen these scenarios. It's always the biggest determinant of whether or not your project goes out of control, meaning in terms of cost, is usually the labor variant. the kind of contractor that you have.
And so it's the only aspect of the basically, you know, generally the construction industry that's a little difficult to predict.
Yes. However, if you know that a specific contractor is aligned with the Construction Industries Federation, the CIF guys, and because then you would know that they also agree to the minimum wage directive that exists, which is a law, which is in law,
yeah.
You would then know. But do you have such time? Do you ask such questions? How do you get proof of such alignment? And in some cases, Helmut, it's literally a some sort of a Russian roulette scenario.
Now, I think that's a very interesting one because when you talk about the predictability aspect of it, because you can easily, you know, predict it depending on the size. You can easily do the math of how much cement, how much bricks, and how much maybe even water that you're gonna need.
Mm.
But for manpower, that's a little tricky because if you look at it from I think to gather that information, you won't have to deal with one company because, chances are very high you're going to have one main company and a bunch of subcontractors.
Also where things get interesting.
Most likely going to be for a lot of small companies a per project type of employment.
Yeah.
They are not going to have a permanent database of how many employees they have and how much these employees are paid at least.
Yeah. So, it makes things interesting. There's obviously a lost opportunity here, which has been like building templates like the Poly Heights building, which has it's not a two-bedroom settings, but slightly bigger bachelor and then actual bachelor flat sizes, because most of those particular units, Helmut, on in that building are single bedroom. Now, the actual bachelor unit is the bigger one, whereas the smaller units on that building, it's literally the size. It's literally this broad, Helmut. The width, it's literally this broad, and it's literally from that wall down to that wall where the TV is in there at the desks.
Yeah.
It's literally just this length, and you've just got a shower, you've just got a, you know, like your kitchen is as you enter, there's no foyer, and you basically everything is like, you know, put up in a scenario of how you position yourself in terms of operation.
Yeah, I've seen a few.
Yeah, so if we look at scenarios like that, it's a dying breed of a kind of a design. But the design is also not there anymore because the most dominant thing, like you cited, is this two-bedroom. And like Francisco cited, this two-bedroom unit.
Mm-hmm.
And going ahead, obviously, because we're actually here to talk about, you know, Africa's decision on climate change. Has been that they cited a whole bunch of stuff. And the document that we technically need to work with, Helmut, is one that is a 10-year strategy document known as the Strategy and Action Plan 2022 to 2032. However, I'm going to nuke this document already in the first statement. I'm going to nuke this document down primarily because
you had to go to this document to start nuking? I started from the decision. Are you kidding?
No, I'm using the decision. I'm using the decision.
Okay.
The decision nukes this document.
Big time.
Because this decision goes and continuously reiterates, well, we need the global climate change platform of the Conference of Parties to put their money where their mouths have been.
Look, that's why I started laughing because I was going through the decisions, and then you send me the African Union Climate Change and Resilience Development Strategy and Action Plan 2022 to 2032.
Mm.
Yeah, and well, lo and behold, the second guy, he shows up there is Moussa Faki, mm. The very same guy that was telling the Italian during the Africa Italy Summit, put your money where your words are. So now I'm gonna walk in the studio today, and sit with basically two begging documents.
Basically, yes. Funny enough, for our listeners to know, next year, Ethiopia will be hosting the Conference of Parties next year. COP 32? No, this 30. Year's 31.
Yeah, 30 was Brazil.
It was Brazil last year. COP 32 next year will be Ethiopia.
Oh, boy.
Why are you saying, oh, boy, Hamid? Because I was hoping. Okay, we had Africa with Egypt and Sharm el-Sheikh.
Yeah.
Where Hage and Ursula von der Leyen. Hamid, I can't find any more evidence of that video anymore. That video, the famous six. But I did find the MOU between Namibia and the EU.
Mm-hmm.
The document itself that Hage signed. The MOU that technically kicks off everything, ne? That we've now seen materialize in Namibia's green industry development. And it's a scenario like this, which is even sad because in the AU decision on page 82 of that document, that AU decision speaks nothing about the green industries. All it speaks about is, please remember to implement this. Please remember to implement that.
And the developed countries, remember what you promised.
Yeah, you know, we need to see your money.
Paris agreements. And to be fair,
they made
those promises. You know those promises that you make to someone's daughter when you're asking for their number? That's what they did.
No. You got the number already.
Yeah.
But you promised, I'll take you on a movie date. Okay, that's my example. But I'll take you on a movie date.
So it's not just me.
And she continues to tell you, so when is the movie coming, Dwight? And you're like, wah! You know, just wait, wah! No, you are promising you'll take me to a movie. All the movies that I want to watch have gone. So, yes. Unfortunately, that's what Africa and the EU are currently doing to each other.
You know those guys, what they did to me this other day?
Who? Which guys?
The movie guys?
What?
I go on their website, and then I find this very nice movie that I would like to watch. So I ask her, she's like, no, I also like that movie. Show up there. That movie is not... I'm like, okay, you know what?
You probably went to the wrong theater.
No.
Was the right one?
The same one.
Same date as
even
well.
Downloaded their app. This is just consuming space in my, space in my phone.
Yeah. When you guys got there... You had to settle for something else.
Yeah, the information that was on the website and the information that they had on their display, you know, just at the entrance of the theater, because you find all these large displays of what movie is playing, is playing when. Oh, boy, that's just wildly different. Just they had to go straight to Plan B, which was also my favorite food.
Mm.
Yeah.
What?
It was either movie or food. So I was like, okay, whichever, because, I made sure that my, both Plan A and Plan B works in my favor.
Mm.
It was it's a strategy I've perfected for a very long time.
Have a Plan A and a Plan B.
Plan A and Plan B. Usually they are all something.
Only when there's a woman that there's a Plan A and a Plan B.
Every guy knows that if you walk in your homie's room and everything is well folded and it's well, well clean, then
somebody has been matched up.
You know, there is no way bro did this out of it because he wanted to be clean. When you walk there and when you get in that room and it looks like there was a tsunami, then he's not expecting.
No, this is a bachelor. This is a bachelor.
It was
me and my tsunami. It's more like organized chaos because I try. It's just like repositioning. Where do I put it this week?
There's always that chair.
Or that pile of shoes.
Yeah.
Or the laundry. It's always the laundry.
Definitely.
It's always the laundry.
When I said, what do you mean? What do you think I meant when I said there's always that chair? No one sits on that chair. It's just a pile.
Meaning it's not a chair.
It's been repurposed. So decisions from the African Union's from the African Union's 39th ordinary session assembly. This is their usual, you know, annual events.
Mm.
So the one for this year, they met and they did talk about obviously, well, a bunch of things. And we've been using this document as a source of reference for a while now, and we still have like a bunch of things that basically comes from their declarations, decisions. And now the one on climate change. Now the one on climate change is a decision.
Yeah.
Now I threw in the El Nino discussion because I feel like I think there's a little bit of they interconnect in from the aspect of preparedness.
Mm.
Yeah. Now it turns out well, El Nino and climate change are two different things. El Nino is a weather phenomenon. That is actually like Dwight explained it the other time when you were pointing this out, that El Nino is it's a weather phenomenon that more often that's mostly influenced by Pacific Ocean surface temperature, and this is because of basically the atmosphere is one giant ecosystem. And when a disturbance is caused in one part, or weather patterns change in one part, it leads to a cascading series of effects in changing in temperature. Basically, that leads to the whole world experiencing some weird weather patterns, which is expected in terms of El Nino. Now, this one is somewhat interesting because both NOAA, the National Oceanic Oceanic and Atmospheric NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, And the African Development Bank weather experts are describing it as something. Basically, all the weather experts are describing it as a super El Nino, and that's basically an El Nino, well, Promax. Now, the last time, at least, I was able to track down in terms of the severity of the El Nino that is predicted to transpire towards the end of the year, 2026 into 2027. The last one of this, or more like, near or if not equal to the intensity of the one that's predicted, happened between, from 1878 to 1879. Mm. And it was severe as heck. Yeah. But that's actually the preparedness that, that made me link the El Nino discussion into this African Union, decisions on climate change. Because, all this warning, all these predictions that are being given, that were being given with regards to the impending El Nino at this point is, considered more of a beware. Yeah, we're not 100% sure that it's going to happen, but the numbers seems to indicate that chances are very high it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And because of that, there are some areas that should expect that should expect heavy rains, including flooding, and there are those that should expect droughts. And we saw this between from 2023 and 2024, where you had Zambia first declared state of emergency, and Namibia followed suit because we didn't have enough rainfall, severe drought. But at the very same time, you saw in East Africa, parts of Kenya, I believe Sudan, there were also severe floods all at the same time. So, and all this is influenced by the rise in temperature above average on the Pacific Ocean. And, I have to say, I never actually looked up to see how big the Pacific Ocean is.
You know, at a certain angle, Helmut?
Yeah.
You don't see any landmass.
Nothing.
That's how big that ocean is.
So basically, if you brought up all the landmass of this planet, glued them together, they would fit in on the Pacific Ocean, and you still have enough room.
Well, not really, Hamoud. It's just, when I said, if you look with a camera angle,
yeah,
And as the Earth rotates.
Just do the comparison.
Yeah.
Put them together.
About how big it is?
The Pacific Ocean is still massive.
Okay. Okay, yeah. That too.
That explains why when you tilt the globe, and you are looking directly at the Pacific Ocean, you can barely see any landmass. It's like everything is on the other side.
Mm.
It turns out, ancient navigators, not one of my favorite because it basically laid the foundation for colonialism. Henry the Navigator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Henry the Navigator was one of those idiots that basically sailed to modern day Guinea and laid the foundation of transatlantic slavery, basically.
Mm.
Turns out to understand El Nino, we first have to agree that the Earth is round, not flat. Now that we have, we set all that aside, we can agree that...
I hope there are no such Namibians.
Flat Earthers?
I hope.
Isn't it amazing how everything is round, but Earth is flat? Jupiter is round, the Sun is round.
The Moon is round,
but Earth is flat.
You can't see past a certain point on the planet, but you still believe the planet is still round.
You have to kid me.
It's flat.
Yeah. Anyway, it turns out about a 32 degrees latitude line both south and north and south. Within this 30 degrees. Not 30 degrees inward towards the equator.
Mm.
If you are looking at the 30 degrees north and latitude line, and 30 degrees south and latitude line towards the equator. This block has something called trade winds. That name is from the fact that those winds are naturally occurring and played very significant role in maritime navigations before the invention of the steam engine, which basically led to the invention of the massive engines that powers cargo ships today.
Mm.
So back then, you had to rely on these winds because of how predictable they are. So when they are too strong, they move, especially on the large parts of the Pacific Ocean. They move a lot of water. A lot of water seems to be in a circular motion. So a lot of fertile and nutrient-rich soil from the seabed of the Pacific Ocean follows that current of motion and brings a lot of nutrients on the surface that is then consumed by your planktons, and you can basically follow the food chain from there.
Mm.
So this plankton obviously also consume this nutrient rich in all this nutrition, and the fish eat those planktons, and the fish creates this very rich environment when it comes to the fishing industry.
Yeah.
So you can just see that from something as simple as the speed of wind, that series of events, the speed with which that wind is blowing, it influences the flow of water in the ocean, which influences the cycle of nutrients in the ocean, which feeds into the food chain in the ocean, which finds itself on the influencing the fishing industry on land.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all this series of events comes from one thing. During an El Nino, there is a slow flow in this wind. When that sluggishness in flow of that wind leads to the slow flow of the current in the water, which means less nutrition for the plankton on the surface and less nutrition for the fish and less economy for the fishing industry. It means less iPhones with two SIM cards for ministers.
Now, you're just making one guy's point here, Helmut. You're making one guy's point here, but you were saying?
I know. So, look, when I was, when I'm just sitting there looking at, this is basically a domino effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, of something as simple as wind motion ends up causing all kinds, moving all kinds of natural chess pieces that ends up impacting the global economy.
Mm.
So, now, because that wind is is moving slow, what happens is the surface water on this on the Pacific Ocean tends to be it's not moving. As a result, it gets hotter than average, and that water is not dissipating, because I believe if it was moving fast, it would be dissipated somehow.
Yeah.
But because of that sluggishness in motion, what happens is this water the temperature increases. When the temperature increases, the water is dissipated. I think the heat is dissipated in the atmosphere, heating up the wind. And what you have at the end of the day is all weather patterns going haywire left, right, and center. You have drought in Zambia and Namibia, and you have floods in parts of Sudan.
Mm.
Isn't it amazing how nature works?
Yeah, Hamoud, and with that massive, extensive lecture you gave right there. The question comes out. Look, it's a good lecture because it shows that you understand the subject matter. I also understand the subject matter of how an undercurrent needs to bring a nutrient from the bottom of the ocean, of the Pacific Ocean, to the top of the surface of the Pacific Ocean, because there are fish species at all levels of an ocean.
Yeah.
But if you now have to go ask have a conversation with that exercise you tried doing with your buddies the one time where you asked them in that one question, and then they were like, what are you saying, Hamilton? What are you talking about?
I've heard those before.
Now, in this strategy document, they've literally got something that describes what that exercise that you try to do, meaning improve climate literacy and awareness. Now, we have to ask in 2026, to what extent has climate literacy and awareness taken place across Namibia? Currently, right now, the most prominent messaging, which is not even the best advertised messaging, because in many scenarios, the stakeholders, or let me rather say the proponents, those that are behind the developments, are piggybacking on us, the media, to basically share, to spread their goodwill throughout the rest of Namibia.
Oh, we can do that. Just pay.
Yeah, just pay. Just pay advertising revenue. So this has been the green industries and their developments, and specifically, and which includes from NIPDB to the green hydrogen program to even Ministry of Agriculture, to Ministry of Environment, to National Planning Commission. All these guys are dependent upon the Namibian media landscape to communicate the messaging on their behalf. Which also includes the Environmental Investment Fund, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where things get interesting and tricky, Helmut. We don't know, and I'll say this confidently, we don't know whether or not people outside of Windhoek understand what Namibia's climate contributions or Namibia's climate promises are. I'll say, use the word promises, because we promise things. We don't know. Nowhere has any ministry gone and assessed whether or not the average Namibian understands climate change. With this El Nino La Nina warning, check again, Helmut, at the end of this year, we will potentially have one or other kind of disastrous response. Mm-hmm. I say potentially.
Most likely.
No, I say potentially, because most likely means it is definitely going to happen. But potentially saying, because we've got to see what will be like the rain forecast, mm-hmm. or the potential for rain that will come through.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, Namibia's rain comes from the Indian Ocean. Namibia's rain does not come from the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
And the Indian Ocean, that rainfall system is impeded because of mountains. And those mountains you find in the Drakensberg in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, I always tried thinking about what's so difficult? Until a meteorologist explained it on what was that event that happened in the U.S.? You remember when California was busy washing away 2 years ago? Not the California fires of last year. The massive rainfall and flooding that they had in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the explanations of rivers in the sky was being given. And I was like, what is a river in the sky now? What is this? But a river in the sky is just a massive collection of water vapor that is stuck there in those upper echelons of the atmospheres, the various atmospheres that are there.
Yeah.
And this is just sort of like a resource that it depends on whether or not the cloud forms or not. Firstly, does the cloud form or not? Second scenario is you then look at how big that weather system is and has that collection of clouds.
Mm.
Because the downside for California was that these were massive clouds. And before that rain of 2024, Helmut, California had been suffering almost, is it 18 years or 8 years of drought?
No rain.
Of no rain. 18 years of drought. Now that is a disaster in Namibia's books. Any time, any day. That's a disaster. And then last year they had, remember the wildfires that happened close to and in the middle of Los Angeles of all places. And then I thought, is this drought wildfires for Los Angeles? And then no one could answer it, you know, sort of like properly. But looking at scenarios like that, we firstly have to understand, okay, who's going to be the La Nina focal point? Who's going to take that brunt? Which country in the southern hemisphere or that borders onto the southern hemisphere or onto the equator, which country is that country going to be? Who's going to take that brunt? Because at the same time that there's an El Nino, there's and La Nina somewhere else. And who's going to be washing away?
And who is going to be all dry?
Who's going to be all dry? Who's going to be basically having to walk all around with gumboots all day long?
Who's going to be swimming to work?
Yeah. So, when such explanations come out, it looks like every time it jogs the memory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it jogs the memory of the everyday person. But now the everyday person listens to Helmut and Dwight in English. What about the other everyday person who doesn't listen in English, who listens in Afrikaans or in Silozi or in all the other particular language mediums across Namibia? Are these kinds of conversations being broached? Now, it leads to the next phase of things. For example, the understanding about, you know, how to deal with a potential disaster. So the Prime Minister's office knows what they need to do.
Yeah.
And so to also agencies and offices on the ground, which are local authorities and like the fire brigades and stuff like that. The scenario on the ground has been, do the average Namibians also realize that we've got a tricky weather system as Namibia?
I mean, we're already semi-arid. That means we're even at a bigger disadvantage.
Helmut, when the explanation for me was expanded last year, about understanding that water that floods into northern Namibia from southern Angola.
Yeah.
That when I told you last week, that is technically water that floods through from DRC, from the Congo Basin, from tropical rainfall. Now, that is the first indicator we've got to look out for. What is that tropical indicator going to be? Because that's water that just decides to flood all the way southwards, through Angola, through Zambia, into Namibia and into northern Botswana, which is the Okavango Delta.
Yeah.
Then we've got to ask the questions, okay, the rest of Namibia's rain that now comes here from the Indian Ocean, what's that indicator going to be like? Because last year there wasn't a tropical storm hitting, there was a tropical storm hitting Mozambique and the year before. But the one before that hit Mozambique and then Zimbabwe, that massive one that pulled through from across Madagascar and then into Mozambique and then into Zimbabwe, that massive one created so much, cool air and cool, if I can say, it's basically its byproducts were that it kept pushing cold air in Namibia's direction, Namibia and Botswana's direction.
Yeah.
Then we started seeing like the massive rainfall that we had in 2025. Yeah, 2025, last year. Well, we were also asking questions about, it's here, it's March, and it's still raining this much. It was when also the president was being inaugurated as well, and you were asking, and I was asking questions about, what's up with this rain? Where's this rain going? How much rain is this? Now, you and I can think that way, because obviously we do the reading for our listeners, having the discussion here. But does the average Namibian have these conversations? Do they identify these particular weather anomalies? I realized something just now, the other day, in the middle of June somewhere. It was raining, Hamoud, in the middle of June, in Rehoboth.
Yeah.
Because of one of the cold fronts that pushed through from the South Pole. And when I went to go visit my sister in Rehoboth, I told her, do you know that day that it was raining with you guys in Rehoboth, there was not a drop of water in Windhoek? And she said, you're lying, Dwight. I told her, it's the truth. What was the what was the key geographic indicator from such a scenario, Hamoud? Was that our mountains here, these mountains as you head southwards, blocked the potential for that, you know, that system to just come down. We just saw the clouds. That's all we saw.
Yeah.
But we didn't have any rain. Now, scenarios like that also has to speak to how different people or people in different geographic locations experience the same particular weather scenarios. That's why I can never understand what, you know, all our colleagues that go to the north, Helmut, when they explain about the water that pushes through from southern Angola. I don't know such a scenario. I've never seen just everywhere it being flooded across, because I don't know it. I come from a different part of Namibia.
Yeah.
So to also, like, for example, what happened in Kitmans and Karasburg back in last year or the year before, when they still had in October the hailstorm. Remember the hailstorm that ended in October in 2024?
Yeah.
Where people were asking questions about what's happening there. And no one knew about winter extending itself all the way into October. And where it even materialized with a severe weather anomaly, i.e., this particular, precipitation coming through. So now we ask the questions in terms of, okay, firstly, where is the next potential, you know, impacting zones going to be? From those impacting zones, this strategy document that's 10 years long, man, this document technically doesn't mean anything. And when you look at the declarations, decisions, and the resolutions where they keep saying, please implement, please implement, please implement.
Please give us money to implement.
Please, developed countries, you promised, give us the money. You promised, remember. And then you sit there thinking, going like, guys, it's 2026.
Okay, you know how SADC said we are going to come up with our own currency by 2018, and then they decided to push everything to what? They don't have a defined date yet. And East African Community was like, we are going to come up with ours by 2024,
yeah.
And they pushed everything to 2031. And now we have the ECOWAS guys. We are going to figure out ours by the end of the year. Come 2027, we are implementing ours.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that one. And then I just came across one that has also been postponed. The same way that I've been postponing being rich. And that is the.
I don't think it's the same thing, Zamut, but okay.
Africa Energy Bank.
An energy bank?
Africa Energy Bank.
How many banks does the continent need?
The African Union have been working on theirs also since the 1960s. Don't worry, we got this. Just since the 1960s. Now, here's the Africa Energy Bank guys, it was supposed to be in June to, you know, to bring the bank into operation, at least management-wise, because they have to carry out like two forms of, you know, of implementation in terms of operationalizing the institution.
Yeah.
The first one is sorting out their management in terms of legislation, hiring, and all that, you know, stuff. And then the next one, operationalization is one of basically carrying out the services of what they do in terms of lending money, you know, banking stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they decided, June is not going to cut it. Let's see if we can do that in, say, in September. But that's just the management type of things. But the real banking initiative, things like where we are going to maybe start, you know,
where the money comes,
where the money comes out to anyone that would like to invest into
a power plant,
anything energy related. We are thinking December. I'm going to put my money in 2027 on that one.
So first we want to appoint people.
Before
they can do the thing.
You know, the guy who started the fake government agency. He did everything in a very short time period.
Why? He was a one-man show, Helmut. What did you expect?
One man? Yeah.
He was a one-man show. He sourced the documents himself. He knew his strategy.
Man is patriotic. He had the flag behind his chair. In his office was well set up. And
he had his strategy. It was a one-man show.
My man.
The best formulated... Not so.
You know, bet they were not one.
Not so good faith projects are usually when it's this just one guy executing it, who came up with the plan and who's executing it. The moment you involve more people, Helmut,
yeah,
you will always have disgruntled customers. You will always have no. He still owes me money.
That part. Look, I want to start. I want to talk about. response and preparedness in terms of the African Union's decisions from earlier this year. But you made a very interesting point when you said, you know, it's about educating the ordinary public on this, you know, on this subject, not just civic education, because, you know, voting is important. And we know that civic education is important because you are educating people on their rights and their responsibilities in relations to governance.
Mm.
But things like climate related basic education is just as important because we are still very agro, you know, society. So you have a lot of subsistence agriculture going on, which is still a way of life for a lot of not just Namibians but a lot of Africans. So that means understanding things like having the basic understanding of weather patterns.
Yeah.
So that they can have the ability to decide whether, you know, how to prepare for a possible El Nino. Because I think, you know, you just don't want to be caught, you know, in a corner. You just realize towards the end of the year that, we're not going to have enough rainfall this year, and which is going to spill over into the following year.
Yeah.
So that means, what would be the rainy season is most likely not going to be a very good rainy season. So that means agriculture is going to be impacted, both the crop and animal husbandry. And so that means if you have this large number of cattle, you may want to figure out how to, sell some of it to prepare how you are going to weather that storm as a farmer.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the basic, the basic knowledge of the future weather patterns 2-3 months down the line, you are going to be caught in a corner where you are going to start wondering, well, should I have known better? I would have come up with something, you know, I would have prepared for this somehow. So I think, that's actually an interesting way of looking at it. Now, seeing that, financial education, according to the Ministry of Finance, financial education, we are well educated, above average in terms of financial education. In theory, the practice there is a whole different discussion, which is why we are saying, split the salary in half and pay us twice a month. Really? Okay. Now,
I still can't believe that person came up.
Money is not a problem. Oh, I had a time of my life with that too, you know, with that discussion yesterday. But anyway.
No, but seriously, I don't know where that harebrained problem response or solution comes from. Because it's harebrained.
Ah, wow.
In many cases, when people have such wonderful ideas.
Yeah.
Which HR practitioner will now have to go and
Not just restructure, but
renegotiate for such a scenario. Because it's based upon the fundamental premise of the agreement was you pay me the full amount.
Yeah.
Not two amounts of one full amount.
Oof, that's gonna. But so that means from the basic understanding of how things are going on in the country, it's not just the governance that we should understand. You know, that we should provide basic education for in terms of civic education, for example.
Yeah.
And it's not just the basic financial education that we should provide education for in terms of financial management, or you know, income and expenditure on a domestic, on a personal level, on a small scale type of things.
Yeah.
But we also have to understand from an agriculture. So this basic agricultural practice in terms of how to farm with animals, how to farm with crops, but I think leaving out something as important as how the weather pattern changes and how it influences agriculture is that's not fair to the, you know, to the individuals that you are imparting this agricultural knowledge on. Because they will have all the knowledge, they'll be doing all the right things, but then Mother Nature comes unpredictable, at least to them. And it ruins everything.
Yeah. And I'm not going to confuse this particular discussion also, Helmut, with like water supply for sanitation use in household scenarios, for example, like we've discussed also, which in a Namibian context is also weird because I made the one particular observation 3 weeks back in the Rehoboth where I saw a guy driving around with that water supply tank, the one in the square in the wire mesh.
Yeah.
Which is about 1,000 liters, you told me. Is it 1,000 liters or 100 liters?
That's definitely going to be somewhere above 1,000.
Yeah. That tank was literally on a single cab Toyota Hilux Bucky high rise. And I stood there looking at, so how are you transporting water in a 1,000 liter tank? Which basically tells me you don't have water at home, but you've got a $700,000 bucky.
I'm assuming this is most likely going to be a farmer.
He was in the town. He wasn't driving to any farm scenario. He was in the town, Helmut. He wasn't driving out. He was driving right past me in a neighborhood, and I stood there and I thought to myself, now, the town of Rehoboth.
Spring water or some sort?
No, Hamut. The town of Rehoboth is endemic with understanding responsibility. It's like many other of the smaller towns in Namibia that we've read the news reports about NAM water cutting them off.
Yeah, like, okay, thank you very much for the tip, but the water is just there.
That thinking as well.
Yeah.
Because now you have to go and explain, for example, let's say they're in Divundu or in Kavango East with that, you know, with the community members telling, oh, thank you for the tap, but I the water is right there for me, or I can just dig a meter down and I will get to my water. Such scenarios are born from a discussion of, now you have to motivate to them why they can't drink that water anymore.
Yeah.
That it technically can make them sick.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not purified, not treated. And now you have to put up a whole, you know, sort of like a sales pitch about what NAM water does for you.
You'll have to do that. Do you know how far some of the homesteads from the river are?
They might be more than 10 k's.
Those are mostly those ones that are in the mainland.
Yeah.
But you'll have a lot of homesteads that, let me just say that are about, maybe 100 meters, just 100 meters away from, from the riverbank.
Mm.
Now, installing a tap in a house of someone like that, and this is a house, it's just made out of brick. There's this place called Karachi Adivundu.
Mm.
So What they did was, I believe when they were building a bridge, they, you know, they created some kind of a canal on one side to channel the water in that direction so they can have a clean environment to work with. And that ditch is, that were wide open ditch still there. So when water level rises, it also floods.
Yeah.
So this place becomes, literally becomes an island when water levels rise. So they are, you know, so they have water flowing on both sides. And they are brick houses. They are brick houses, former structures.
Yeah.
And they do much of the laundry in the river. Now, imagine explaining to that to someone that lives at that area, one of them being my uncle, that this
Why do you want to explain to your uncle, Hamut? But yeah, go.
No, that's not how I commit suicide. But anyway, so what you have is...
Yeah.
That's how people get punched in the face. Yeah. Don't play with African culture. So, the thing is, I think it's going to require a lot of... I don't even want to use the word incentive because that that would be the wrong one.
Mm.
Yeah, you will have to really sell the idea of why I have to pay for something that I can easily access with my bucket.
Mm.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
On a daily basis.
Yeah.
Which is free, by the way.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, like everyone else living in a country that, or more like, you know, in a global economy with a ever-rising cost of living, I want to cut cost. And you have a lot of people just decided to decide to buy a generator and have a backyard garden.
Yeah. Which also straightforward and easy.
Yeah, straightforward and easy. Now, the thing is, if we are going to provide electricity, that's very easy.
Mm.
That's very easy. All we just, that's very easy to explain. All those houses have electricity, but water installation, that they also have that. You'll have taps and all that, which is, it's very easy to explain, but making them to use the services of the that you have installed in the house only,
mm.
that's going to take a very long time and one heck of a campaign.
Now, look at things like that, right?
Yeah.
Now, the biggest worry, obviously, for many rural communities have been access to water. And now, which also now becomes part of the broader development agenda of Namibia, they also now want electricity to also look at each other in during nighttime, be romantic, and all that other stuff. And I'm just putting things in there, guys. Don't worry. It's me putting things in there. Not that candlelight never did its job, but you know what? You want a bright and clear picture. So, we obviously see now... What's with that face?
Really went full Valentine with that explain. Candlelight.
Well, I had to be as poetic as possible,
Candlelight dinner. Oh, boy.
And farm lamps, those farm lamps that the oil lamps that we use.
Look, those things really makes me admire the field, of how powerful psychology and how it's intertwined with marketing. Because I have a lot of female friends that, they live in Windhoek with a pile of candle in the room.
Okay, that's a safety hazard, Helmut, that you're explaining to me.
There are shops that sell those things. This one has this type of scent. I'm like, look, the bulb is fine. I'm good.
Well, in many cases, Helmut, they want the atmosphere. They want the aura.
Open the windows.
And then they tell you they're afraid of the bugs outside the window.
Right.
And then you wonder, then you start making 1 + 1 = 2 sums in your head because you realize... Why is Helmut there?
Yeah.
And the window should not be opened up.
You're right, though. You're right with fire hazard.
No, not just with fire hazard.
Yeah.
But anyway, Helmut, let's move on from that particular scenario.
You're calling the fire department.
From that particular scenario.
Find someone's husband, in a box. What happened? The house is on fire. Well, aren't you married? Well, can you just switch off the fire? We can talk about this later. Anyway, you were saying?
Oh, you are married now, Helmut.
Oh, absolutely not.
Oh, okay. No, we just had to make sure. That's all.
I totally get your point. Well, you know, the lawyer that called, that created a whole new category of lawyers. WhatsApp qualified lawyer.
Mm.
Well, he had a certain concern at some point of some Namibians, you know, marrying sort of like trying to pull off a trick of marrying two wives
at the same time. Yeah.
At least, via civil law. Traditionally, boy, that's still practiced a lot. I've come to learn. It turns out it's still being practiced a lot.
Yeah.
In this economy?
Well, look, some guys probably think they've got money.
Look, if you can afford it, go for it.
Well, the first thing I'd assume is that the wives, those ladies also have their own jobs.
I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm also assuming. But I'm getting back on point right now, besides the assumptions of things. So the climate strategy and action plan that the AU outlined, Helmut, actually under Chapter 4 makes things a bit interesting. Now, remember, it's also under Chapter 4 where I referenced the improved climate literacy and awareness discussion. Now, here's the thing. Up until now, I'm not seeing any climate change or any climate related advertising taking place. Awareness campaigning should not just run on the piggyback of us, the media, with the express hope that those who are planning these engagements, that we hope you communicate the message. Well, I'm gonna be limited to 500 words in the e-paper. We're gonna be limited to a 3-hour show.
Yeah.
Where we won't even be able to exhaust all the relevant literacy or literature that we have at our disposal, because the discussion points towards basically making sense of what is to be planned and what is actually happening. Now, here's the biggest thing, even in an African context and even in a Namibian context, we don't know where we are. We don't know where we are. This decisions, declarations, and resolutions document just said, thank you for the report here. Thank you for that report there. Thank you for hosting the G20. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's all it says. That's all it says. And then it says, the only one of the three or four statements it makes is, Europe, you must put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
But Europe is already doing it, and it tries to say, listen, African countries then have to try and find ways to support at all multilateral avenues or platforms that the world basically adopts the commitments that were made in 2015. Now, when you come to scenarios, Helmut, for example, breaking down that chapter 4 of this action plan and strategy document.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they speak about strengthening governance and policy. But governance and policy, first and foremost, do some of these African countries realize that they might have governance issues in general, not just about climate, in general?
Yep.
So, you know, Helmut, I was standing, and this is where we get to the governance side of things. I'm standing with another Namibian there at this African Union Special Technical Committee on Labor, Employment and Social Development. I'm standing outside after we were told to leave because we realized at this AUSTC that seven African countries are sanctioned, which only left 48 countries available to participate in the deliberations taking place now at Country Club.
Yeah.
Now, that's was where I called when I called you, and I told you that particular joke because I couldn't let the joke wait here until we got here to the studio. After that, I go back in to go and sit down because I had to stretch my legs a little bit, and the process for basically adopting the agenda. We got a document which is the program, right?
Yeah,
right there at the event. Today on day one. And then it clearly says there at the top, delegates have to adopt the agenda of the bureau. And I sit there thinking to myself, couldn't this have been done yesterday in, you know, pre-conference preparations?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why must they do now? Why must they now do this before? Because I'm waiting for two key presentations, the International Labour Organization, and there's a second one. And then the guy who is from the council of the AUSTC, the legal council, it's technically like someone from the AU's branch, that specific branch, that special technical committee branch, who can start a legal process.
Yeah.
This legal process being basically that all members of the four quarters of the African continent, meaning north, south, east, and west, that sort of like a chairperson out of those nations are present, and then they can start a process to adopt the agenda for the next 4 days and 5 days here in Windhoek. So, as I'm now sitting there, we get chased out. Yeah, the media must not see this. Okay, we all leave. So I'm standing next to the other Namibian. He's a guy from Nampa. And he says, Dwight, can you believe there are countries in there who have presidents who don't even know in what year some of those presidents are? I'm actually referencing Cameroon here. And besides, also Cameroon came a little bit late even today. I'm referencing Cameroon. And then we also cited, and then it actually spurred me. In some cases, this spurs me on in certain scenarios in terms of understanding how we have got countries on this continent,
yeah,
who wish to participate at multilateral or international levels, but they've got so many particular, if I can say, skeletons in their closets that it's impossible to ignore these skeletons. For example, the Senegal discussion about the loan that they borrowed, the IMF loan,
yeah,
that you cited to us many times, mm-hmm, and how bad that has been. And when I went and looked up that story as well,
yeah,
the former political ally of the current president is trying to sort of like put in a law that bars any president from coming from a political party. Now ask yourself, Hamoud, in what world of madness?
Yeah, and the new guy decided to start his own political party?
No, he realized he has to start his own political, yeah, party. And then the guy he made speaker decides to try and bring in a piece of legislation that the Constitutional Court of Senegal went and said, brah, what are you pulling here? What illegal moves are you pulling here? You can't bring in something that prohibits or limits or restricts someone else's right to being from a political party.
But the good thing is they have a constitution that they basically have an institution like the court that sort of like intervenes. And yeah, that's the same thing that I actually like about Kenya right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the excellent example where I've seen this is basically Kenya, where every time their president, you know, signs some document out there, signs some agreement, when he gets back to Kenya, it's the court that keeps telling him, yeah, no, man, we don't know what you're thinking, but what you signed versus the laws that we have here at home are not in sync. So,
yeah. And
reassess, please.
And in scenarios like this, right,
yeah,
where you really have to interrogate, okay, so why is the AU putting the heads of state platform on a major pedestal? And why are we not seeing rather that concerted decisions that are debated upon at a Pan-African Parliament level,
mm-hmm,
that decisions from there technically are adopted? And then we realize this basically shows how Africa cannot achieve its integration quick enough. Yeah. How is it possible that in the European context, the Europeans could gradually achieve single market and economic integration in such a smooth manner? They will still have the international relations issues with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are in NATO, some of them are not. But in reality,
they are nowhere perfect. They have their own disagreements.
Oh yes, yeah, they have those disagreements like every day. I mean, the latest now bone of contention is being that the new British Prime Minister Burnham literally wants to pursue joining the EU back. But Keir Starmer tried that, has been working on that process.
Yeah.
So now Burnham just wants to sort of like fast track that process. But he needs an approval rating from the other EU member nations that Boris Johnson was throwing mud at. Boris Johnson was the guy, the previous prime minister, saying, no, we don't need the EU. The EU is doing this. The EU is making decisions for us. All those manner of noises he was busy making. Now, another prime minister, three, four prime ministers later, is now trying to find or fast-track a way back into the EU. And on the EU level, it's basically when the when those all those 27 member nations have to say yes to allowing the UK back in. But you can see how quickly the process works.
I think part of the, you know, I think part of the good thing about the EU when it comes to governance is that the, you know, it was an open secret for them. It's actually not an open secret. It's an open secret in Africa, but not for the EU, because for them, I mean, you just have you know, you just have a bunch of prime ministers, and you just have a bunch of prime ministers, and you know, and monarchies that are constitutional monarchies now. Yeah, and Africa has the same family oriented type of leadership structure at the top, but we don't want to talk about that. Yeah, we don't want to, to address the reality at the table that a lot of African countries are barely democratic. What you have is just a bunch of family members that just keep, that have created some kind of revolving door politics where they have their fingers into everything political and economics. And you have the wife is, has that position, the daughter has that position, the husband has that position, the niece and the nephew, they are all, call it a strategic, power distribution within a family structure. At this point, you may as well just remove the word democracy and call it a monarchy for a lot of African countries, and that would qualify. But I feel like this is not, it's not even an elephant. This is a woolly mammoth, fully grown woolly mammoth in the African Union. Who is going to bring that up?
No one.
No one is going to bring that up.
No one is going to bring it up. No one will attempt to bring it up.
Nope.
Because if you ask the particular question, Helmut, when I said literally, I don't see a clear picture of the integration successfully happening, right? I don't see any of it. At this AU thing, at this AU Special Technical Committee engagement here in Vintu, there's a report that the same committee is championing for people, visitors, media, us, to basically download and read. And this report, Helmut, is based on migrant labor. Much of the speeches that were also given there was a discussion about, workers or migrant workers and protecting their jobs and protecting their futures. And technically, the engagement here in Windhoek is about the welfare systems of member nations and how to have, like, cross-border collaboration in terms of that. Because at the heart of this, you're going to immediately see AfCFTA will pop up.
Yeah, definitely.
And if AfCFTA pops up, much of these particular sort of like 54, 55 member nation templates need already to be in order. But why is it taking so long? Why are things taking so long?
Oh, no. Thank you for bringing that up. One of the reasons why the implementation of single currency have failed for all the blocks that I looked at, that's COMESA, SADC, the East African Community, and then you throw in the ECOWAS guys, is because you have some countries that belong to more than one bloc.
Yes. Kenya is at fault for that. Kenya DRC is a major headache for that.
DRC is both a member of the East African Community and SADC.
Yeah, and it also is the central, that one that we discovered with this, that has the one central bank, who went and spoke about a central bank for Africa.
Yeah.
Remember those guys?
Yeah.
DRC also has some linkages, because it's just on the other side of the Congo River, you find the other Congo, and then on the other side of that country's border, you find Chad and Central African Republic.
Yeah.
It's most those clusters. Yeah,
Uganda on the, you know, on the neighboring to DRC.
Yeah. And dimensions of such things are usually about, okay, who actually benefits, or is this actually sort of like a, you know, an exercise of altruism, meaning we're doing this for the better good of all our economies. For example, you can clearly see in the European context, it's France and Germany. France and Germany had to convince the other guys. France and Germany had to say, we manufacture the most. We are basing the euro on our economies. If you want to borrow money, you borrow technically out of our economies.
Mm-hmm.
And technically that's what the Greeks, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the Irish, and the Italians said yes to. But the Italians technically are part of France because they were part of the G7,
mm-hmm.
Italy. Because they're also a massive producer, a massive manufacturer. But all these guys went and said, yeah, sure, not a problem. Let's base the euro banking and the euro economy on your two economies, with the other economies just playing sort of like support in that scenario. Now, you're going to ask this question, Helmut, and I'm going to ask this question. Whose economy will the AU, economic integration, be based upon? Whose currency is strong enough? Whose currency will be strengthened through that? Because believe you me, the South Africans won't say yes. Believe you me, even the Namibians won't say yes. I know we won't say yes, Helmut. I know the Zambians and the Angolans won't say yes to lose the Kwanza and the Kwacha.
I don't think they are going to ask.
They're just going to adopt.
It's one of the adoption requirement.
Yeah.
One of the adoption requirement that I've seen, in all this, come up with a new currency for regional integration is that, especially the East African community, they have these very specific outlines of this, the requirements that a country must meet, you know, that basically all the countries in the East African community have to meet in order for them to come up with, with that single currency.
Mm.
And, you see, a speech was given at their annual event, I think, earlier this month.
Mm.
Yeah, where their current president pointed out that we are nowhere near meeting the requirements that we have set up in order for us to have a single currency. We are not even trying. We are nowhere near.
But he didn't even say what.
She.
She.
Yeah.
So it's Tanzania's boss. Tanzania's.
No, Suluhu Hassan. Suluhu Hassan. That name I know. That one, she has a different name.
So is she like a government appointed person, but not a national leader?
I have a part of a speech that I basically added to my article.
Mm.
That was that. This was revealed. Paragraph above. Other regional blocs on the continent, like the East African Community and the Common Market for Eastern and Southern Africa, that's COMESA, all have similar plans that have not taken off the ground for multiple reasons, according to Kenyan Wall Street. It's like a financial magazine or media, entity they have.
Yeah.
Now, the East African community plans to launch a single currency is facing hurdles for widening gaps between institutional preparedness and economic reality. This is the same thing that we are seeing with the African, Africa Energy Bank.
Mm.
Yeah. But now, interesting enough, the Africa Energy Bank, three countries, I think, four or five countries ran for, a competition or some kind of vote on who should host the headquarters of that bank. And South Africa, Nigeria actually won the race to host the headquarters of the Africa Energy Bank, beating, I believe, Benin, South Africa, and Ghana. Now, back to the East African community. The reason why, the institutional preparation and economic reality that is hindering the implementation of the East African community from implementing its regional integration single currency was revealed revealed during the East African community's financial year 2026-2027 budget speech that was recently delivered by Council of Ministers Chairperson Rebecca Kadaga to the East African Legislative Assembly. And Rebecca Kadaga revealed that only 4 of the bloc's 8 partner states have achieved the protocol's 8% headline inflation ceiling. The budget speech also pointed out that only 2 member states have met the requirement to hold foreign exchange reserves equivalent to at least 4.5 months worth of imports. 2 countries. And this at only
Namibia
2 countries.
Namibia on average holds about 6 months worth.
Only 2 countries. Out of how many?
Out of 8.
12.
2 out of 12.
That means 10 did not, and she listed about 5 requirements that just keeps darker the more you read.
Yeah.
So they had to push the whole thing to 2031, I believe.
From when? This year.
2024.
From 2024.
They're supposed to, you know, to bring about the whole currency, you know, similar regional currency for regional integration in 2024. And that deadline is obviously way past.
I think there's a lot of mistrust in Eastern Africa.
For SADC, it was supposed to be in 2018, and we are in 2020. And there is a very excellent diplomatic excuse over why that didn't happen on the SADC website. Obviously, this didn't happen, but we achieved this and this. I'm like, seriously?
I also suspect nobody would have, in the SADC scenario,
yeah.
Part of that reasoning probably was that nobody would have wanted the South African rand to replace their currency. Even though Angola collects...
This is more political, isn't it?
It is, Helmut. It makes things difficult because this technically means this is a discussion that has to go through our parliaments.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely have to go through.
Okay, in a SADC sense, and even like in a Kenyan sense, yes, because we've seen now every time how William Ruto has to eat humble pie every time. So, for the decisions he makes. Because in many cases, it's things that he gets dragged to the Constitutional Court to by NGOs.
Yeah.
Like the
Kenyan High Court and Supreme Court.
The health
strategy.
Yeah. That was an NGO
that
dragged them to that court.
Yeah.
It wasn't even other political parties. It was an NGO.
Yeah, I think this is the good thing about having civil society organization. Remember even during Zuma, you know, Zuma administration in South Africa, the nuclear deal with Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was 2 NGOs. And recently, with, you know, it was a bunch of NGOs in Africa and Switzerland that told Nestle, you know, that's a lot of sugar you are putting in that kids, you know, a kid's breakfast.
And now Traoré,
that
is, and now
that's
Traoré
way
is using
above.
It, and now Traoré is using it against, as in part of his political speeches.
I mean, it's very catchy. I would use it too. And you have a lot of African NGOs that basically came together and they pointed that out. Look, I think NGOs have their more like NGOs or basically civil society organizations have their own pros and cons, especially when it comes to implementation. Sometimes they can be a pain in the behind.
Yeah.
But sometimes they can come in very handy in terms of like complementing the checks and balances in terms of power distribution between the 3 main branches that we have in a democratic society. Now, here's the thing. So, apart from the eureka moment that you just gave me, which is, my God, this is it's in a political arena, so it's obviously going to have some political world aspect to it.
Yeah.
But the economic requirements that are basically put in place, like especially for the East African community, because I read that one up, extensively. So there are economic requirements that are set in place that must be met.
Mm.
And if you look up, the African Union's single currency, the African Union's single currency, it's embedded in the African Union Charter from the found, it's in the very founding document, the implementation of a single currency. I never really understood, in the beginning why Gaddafi was singing it a lot about coming up with the African Central Bank, Africa wise like a single currency.
Mm.
Until I basically, sort of like tried to, to understand things from a legislative perspective, that everything that's being brought up, like, take for example in Parliament, it's most likely going to have, a legal backing. There's a piece of legislation that backs up the point that's being made. Otherwise, then you'll have to explain everything from, let's start an Act of Parliament, and then that Act of Parliament is going to have all these authorities and all that. But the African Union's idea from the beginning was that have all these different blocks, like you have your ECOWAS and COMESA, and we have a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you must have all these guys have their own, regional currencies. I don't know how we are going to now bring all this together to merge them into one. I don't think the African Union thought that one through, considering the leadership. Differences on the African continent. I think that's going to be a very tricky one.
Mm.
But economic-wise, the East African community one made for a sobering reading. And I think that's easily applicable to pretty much the entire continent in terms of economic progress. And the El Nino prediction. And when you factor in things like the ongoing Ebola, and the article that HD shared, and the African News article on the African Development Bank weather experts talking to Reuters about the possible El Nino.
Mm.
One thing that's pointed out is that African countries' economies are already struggling because of the economic fallout coming out of the war in the Middle East between, Iran, Israel, and the U.S.
Yeah.
Now, we already have a lot of, catching up to do development-wise because of the whole colonialism thing. And we have a lot of, power struggle in between on how the country should be run. And you have this very clear and very, very, I think very historically interesting picture. In terms of looking back to what happened to a lot of countries, African countries, when they achieved their independence. And that's transpiring in Senegal right now. You have two guys that were basically friends, came to power, and then they started falling out on how they should run the country. And now you have all these disagreements, and you have all these kinds of political parties in all of these individual countries and they have their own, we each have our own different problems. Throw in the COVID-19 pandemic, and you have the war in the Middle East, and you have the Russia-Ukraine war, and a possible El Nino.
Mm.
That's a lot of things. Every time that I look at this, every time that we have discussions like this, I keep going, you know what, public office can stay. I think I'm good. That's a lot of headache.
I wanted to add on the dimensions of understanding through how laws are obviously made. Now, Namibia obviously has that particular thing that it recognizes. Anything made at an AU level and any other particular like association that Namibia is part of, those laws can be adopted into Namibia, which is also from a UN level scenario, as long as it, there are no direct conflicts of one or other scenario. But I want to point to Namibia's action, Helmut. Namibia's actions on the ground. What we are seeing is that Namibia is trying trying to look good with the AFCFTA adoption. But we all know that it's another country that has to do this. We all know it's another country. Or the other countries, the other African countries. The other worrisome scenario is obviously also one based upon, we are already busy with climate adaptation strategies in Namibia's context, Amut. We, as Namibia, we're already busy with our climate adaptation scenarios. We're already busy with a green industries rollout. We're already busy with how is Namibia going to respond if one of these oil wells there out in the sea are going to get their, you know, final investment decisions to be made. For some reason, people are willing this thing into operation. For some reason, they are willing this thing into operation. What do you mean? You know, have you ever gone to a church and people are like, I am willing away my debts. I am praying away my debts. Oh, yeah. Yes, that is the same explainer I'm using. For some reason, people are using, are looking at this discussion of those, that oil as willing Namibia's prosperity into reality.
Like it's going to be some kind of a silver bullet.
If the first barrel gets pumped, which remember to Robin Sherborne's analysis at the start of the year.
Yeah.
What he cited, they just don't know as civil society. Is Namibia betting on a decision later this year coming through? Or is Namibia being clever in terms of its budgeting and decision making and saying, listen, let's put things from this nature on hold, and we focus our development process and development budget on those particular goals.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of actions, it seems like Namibia, in the collection of African countries, has made up its mind. We've made up our mind.
Mm.
Our mind, Helmut, is one based upon us. Us, just us. Us, only us, and just us. I know we try to look good and special with like these AU engagements that started like today. How much have you sat through that thing yesterday? Yo, our MCs, they know how to brag about us, but okay. I thought we were a humble nation, but you know,
we're not.
You know, the one MC was Namibian. Yeah. She's
rubbing it in everyone's face.
Okay. Bringing things forward, the concern that we have to achieve,
yeah,
and that's on the continent. I'm now taking things back to the continent level. Let me just quickly open up this document again. The concern that we've got to to address here is, for example, in the rest of that chapter 4, they've got other sub-chapters there, is the one which looks at food systems that have to be adapted to the climate. Then you have to protect ecosystems. Now, currently already, there are, even in a Namibian context, there are Namibians who don't understand why ecosystems need to be protected and you cannot go and farm there. You may not go and farm there. Then there's other dimensions of enhancing climate resilient and low carbon energy and infrastructure systems, which also now once again is a bunch of high grade English words and vocabulary that was used there. If you try to now mince that down and filter it down to the ordinary person on the street, this technically means climate resilient, for example, infrastructure like not using cement for construction. Or not using wood for construction, you know, chopping down a tree to make a structure. Or using low carbon energy, meaning don't burn anything or make smoke or anything, building this new pieces of infrastructure. The downside is, literally, how are you communicating that to the person on the ground? Who? Where? How? And that, I don't want to say ridiculous training I went to last week. But I used the word already, I'm sorry.
Yeah, be kidding me.
I will use the word already. Yeah. I sat there for the first 3 days, Hamud, technically knowing too much. I felt like that kid that was deliberately held back in a grade, but because the kid already knows what they, from previous year's exposure to the syllabus, already knows what the syllabus for this year will be, because the kid was already there, just knows all the answers. I just went up until the Wednesday. I couldn't take it anymore for the last 2 days. The dimension that comes through from what was being spoken about there was that we have to understand the current laws that you've got. What do they do to provide for climate resilience, climate mitigation, and even dealing with like acts of environmental damage, for example? Remember Uis with its gaping holes that haven't been rehabilitated? And then the local community there wanted to throw it on the company, the new mining company that wanted to come and put up shop there. And because the most fundamental thing was missing, public engagement, that is what happened. Now, we have to ask the question on the continent has been, all these other African countries, are they doing public engagement, public stakeholder engagement for climate resilience, resilient discussions? Because, Helmut, there's no way that you can tell me you've got to achieve certain goals, but I'm not seeing public engagement.
Remember that presidential foreign investment board organization that was started by one man in Nigeria? That the, you know, the president,
the disputed one.
Yeah, the president now had to come out and start investigating after they realized that the organization was so legit. The homeboys, you know, was now meeting with foreign investors and foreign dignitaries on behalf of the president, when the president had no idea this person was doing this. Now, remember when I kept saying that, how can someone pull off something like this if you have public engagements? And you told me that I'm looking at this from a Namibian perspective. What that gave me is that I have a sneaky suspicion this whole consultation thing that we are taking for granted here is not practiced by a lot of countries.
No.
And that's the only way someone can go out there and start an organization without, without raising any red flags. Because
even March and March in South Africa, even March and March, the ignorance between the protesters was not satisfied or was not met by local politicians from their country going out and explaining to them, hey guys,
this is how things work.
This is how things work. Now Ghana wants to go and open up a court case at the ICC against South Africa for crimes against humanity. The same exact kind of court case South Africa wanted to bring against Israel. But South Africa's image is one literally of a blender. I mean, it can blend one direction and it can blend the other direction. It can give you two formats of liquid.
I think South Africa's South Africa's image, especially in relations to xenophobia, I think the South African government I'm sorry to say, is at fault here, because this is something that has been going on for a while. They should have addressed it years ago. If they just wanted to put in the effort to address that problem, they would have. But they, for some reason, just started looking at it as an afterthought, because this is not the first time that foreign nationals are being caught in local public anger that's most likely fermented by economic disparities, for the most part. This is not the first time. This is not the first time that Mozambican and especially Zimbabweans have been caught in a crossfire of South Africa's xenophobic tendencies. I think this one have been, I think because of that, it's been tolerated for a very long time. So it just kept going worse and worse, and now they have South Africa has an international image to clean.
Well, the international image, Hamid, is also one now of primarily what that action is causing in the broader continental discussion. Primarily because we have to see how the integration will take place under this new particular stress. From a Namibian perspective, I am seeing that Namibia doesn't really put AU values to the forefront. We rather put UN values to the forefront and partner values. I mean, case in point, specifically, our president just 2 weeks back, the week before, president went to Namibia's two largest trading partners. Now the president just has to go to the EU as the third largest trading partner. So clearly, you can immediately see who Namibia values up front. In South Africa, you should have seen what that discussion was like, Helmut. That that first night in terms of the high-level engagement. It seemed like it's like siblings, family meeting each other. I don't know why the South Africans are so overly friendly with that. But yeah, and even with Botswana. When
I mean, we were, you know, we were, well, former conjoined twin.
But it looks like a sibling, you know, family get together.
Yeah.
Same was also when President Nandin Daitwa went to China the week before.
Yeah.
It looked like we were at a family gathering, you know.
Just having a good time. Just talking about trade. Oh, these are your industries. Oh, these are your institutions.
And
nice.
Flying to five cities.
That's
five major industrial cities. In order to understand the extent of what Namibia can tap into. So, you don't hear any other African country showing up and being this purposeful on its own particular agenda. Now, this is where this just reinforces my point. We are thinking about us first. Now, remember, just
that
a little bit
sense.
I mentioned the oil discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Let me add another point in terms of what that action plan of AU wants to also look into. That action plan, Helmut, then goes on to promoting low-carbon, resilient mobility and transport systems. Now, what is low-carbon, resilient mobility and transport systems? Low-carbon means no fossil fuel. Are we communicating this to the DRCs? To the Egypts? Who's Africa's most populous? It's most Nigeria.
Okay, here's the thing. When you say that, are we communicating this with the Nigerians and Egyptians?
And the DRCs?
I had no idea. I've been making you famous this whole time.
Thank you. I've been looking at myself as well.
Okay.
So I've just been there on one frame the whole time. So for the next 20 minutes, guys. Yeah, for the next 20 minutes.
Terrible at multitasking.
It'll be Helmut now that you'll be seeing.
Anyway, I think this is a part of the problem. It's like we all have skeletons in our closets that every time that we meet, especially during the annual, you know, annual sessions at the African Union, we don't want to address. I don't think the president of Cameroon wants to have a conversation around term limit. I don't think Kagame and you know
and Musavikes
and Museveni want to have that conversation either.
Mm. Because yeah. Bramusa Vakes doesn't want to. I don't think he even sees an end to his term. Him and Paul Biya. But we know Biya doesn't know where he is, in which term he is.
No, the thing is, yeah, you have a good point there.
We know Paul Biya doesn't know where he is, and which term. Don't worry, guys. That happens with us men.
Welcome to Africa.
We start losing cognitive ability. At a certain age level. That's why last week we were talking about magnesium and iron tablets and supplements.
Uh-huh.
Hint, hint.
Yeah, so now that's you have a lot of leaders that would not want to have a discussion around term limit. And you have a lot of countries like Namibia that would not want to have a discussion around, hey, what's up with the green hydrogen and oil at the same time?
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
You Save, we all save at You Save. You Save, Wales. 15 minutes left to the hour of 7. You are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. But before we continue, let's take a live read.
The Wits University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever.
Right, so we have 14 minutes to wrap up. So the solution.
Yeah, to you. What does promoting low-carbon, resilient mobility and transport systems sound like?
Energy transition,
mobility,
transport in transport.
Yeah, means electric no cars. Fossil fuels, electric cars.
Yeah,
electric integrated, bikes, electric, efficient everything. Public transport. Do you see any of that happening on the African continent?
No.
We've got how many oil producers? There's Nigeria. There's Equatorial Guinea, Gabon,
yeah.
Angola, Mozambique. Namibia is about to step into that.
Yeah.
Tanzania, Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Morocco. I'm already at 11 countries. No, I'm at 17 countries. No, 11, sorry. Who else? Mali. It's a ton of countries. It's literally a ton of countries. So,
Dwight,
huh?
Africa Energy Bank
is
a collaboration idea between Afri Exim Bank and African Petroleum Producers Organization, APPO.
Yeah, and how many are there?
Now, the APPO guys... I know that the three guys that fought for the the three guys that fought to host the central bank, the headquarter of that bank, South Africa and Nigeria, and South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, and Benin. Oh no, there's one heck of a list here. Oh boy, Tanzania.
Yeah, I mentioned Tanzania.
Oh.
You mentioned Ghana and Benin, so that makes it 13 countries. Yeah.
Let me just get a whole full list because they only have members. They only have just one giant, flags here. Our members, they just decided to show off their flags, as part of our members.
Okay, let's make it at around 20. Let me just push it up to 20. Namibia is there. I see us. I see our flag. Yes. I even see, who's that? They're next to Ghana. Namibia, Ghana, and?
They say Uzbekistan. This one here.
Yeah.
That's Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan?
Nigeria.
What? What? I thought you were mispronouncing a name. I thought it was Uzbekistan. You went like Uzbekistan.
I think it's from the pidgin English word, abeg, which is used a lot in Nigeria. So in the meme world, they just decided to take that word and add stan to it.
Abegistan. It sounds very closer to that one opening scene in what's that game that I played, Red Dead Redemption, where the character John Marsden comes up to the fort where his former sort of like crime friend is holed up in, and he goes like, "I implore you," and then the character comes back, "You implores me." He put an S there where there was not supposed to be an S. But yeah, getting back.
Here's your list. You have Algeria. Yeah, you have Algeria, Angola, Benin, Cameroon, Benin. You know, if you're African, you know that every time people talk about witchcraft, think Benin. The very same way that you, if you're in Namibia, when they say witchcraft, they think of Bango, Zambezi, a little bit of Ndonga on the side.
In Namibia, when you speak about witchcraft, you have to give people like varying degrees. You give them that mind map that the industrial psychologist gives you in terms where is your character? What kind of a person are you?
You know one weird thing about stereotypes? Anyway, you have Benin, Cameroon, Chad, and then you have Republic of Congo. That's Congo-Brazzaville. You have DRC, Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, Equatorial Guinea. You have Gabon, Ghana, Libya, Namibia, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, and South Africa. That's about 18 or 19 countries.
Yeah. So 20 countries. Now, factor those guys in, Helmut, and ask yourself, promoting low carbon, resilient mobility and transport systems basically speaks towards, let's abandon, who's that? What's that?
Observer state.
Morocco. Who? I can't see from here, Helmut.
Venezuela.
Venezuela!
When I tell you guys I love my continent.
Yeah, we are this continent, we are confused. But anyway.
Yeah, they are observer state since 2021.
Okay, so it was given to them. It was given to them. But, I mean, okay, our oil, the African oil, most probably is way different from the Venezuelan current.
In terms of chemical component, maybe even viscosity, chemical structure.
Yeah, all that. And it potentially that other products could be made from it versus what they can make from it.
Yeah.
Now, low carbon resilient mobility speaks towards having public infrastructure that works for all.
Yeah.
Speaks towards that same public infrastructure being affordable for all.
Yeah.
Now, Windhoek, back in last month, or at the start of this month, went and announced the Smart City Strategy. Remember the document that I couldn't get my hands on? Because when I asked one of the councillors who was the team leader of this particular strategy document, asked him, so, councillor, can we get a copy of the document? No, it first has to go before council. And you're like, now how are you launching a document? And the thing is not even yet at council as yet. But anyway, let's not break eggshells over nothing. So, Namibia or Windhoek itself wishes to bring in, Helmut, a commuter rail system that runs all the way from Karatura and Ochomisa. Let me just add Ochomisa in there. All the way through to Rehoboth. Through Windhoek, it runs like this. To Rehoboth. Ne?
Okay, so
I don't know when that will take place. I don't know with what budget that will take place, because that will definitely be in US dollar or euro.
Yep.
It won't be in yuan. It won't be in yen. It won't be in rand. It'll definitely be in dollar. It won't even be in the ruble. So when you look at that scenario, it is for the best part, it looks like a good plan. It looks like a nice plan. And that plan is a plan that comes through from the UN Habitat. Like I said a little bit earlier, Namibia's actions is not actions that tries to follow AU commitments. Namibia's actions follows UN commitments. So Namibia's actions are purposeful. Our actions are about, let's sort our things up. Let's align with the UN, because we can clearly see at the AU level. There's a lovely Afrikaans phrase I'd like to use here. But we can technically see it's just a whole bunch of confusion. People don't know what they want for their countries at the AU level.
You know, on the the sort of like clinging on to non-renewable, sources of energy, which is basically Namibia and a lot of other African countries that we have on this list, as you can imagine, came together and decided, you know what, you know, this whole energy transition, maybe it's taking a little too fast.
Mm.
And Africa needs to industrialize. That means we need affordable and efficient energy, and affordable and reliable and efficient energy. That means we need time. We have to transition on our own time in this whole energy transition, and feel like we are being rushed into the, you know, we are being rushed through the transition process. So then you saw the Afri Exim Bank, which is a import export bank, and you have a bunch of almost 20 African countries that are major oil producers on the continent.
Yeah.
That basically came together with Africa, with Afri Exim Bank, and said, you know what, we have to come up with our own financial structure that will finance non-renewable sources of energy initiatives, because we know that the Western financial institutions that we rely on to finance this type of projects, they are not willing. They are more reluctant, and that's even an understatement. They are even more reluctant to finance non-renewable source of energy.
Yeah,
that sounds to me like we are sitting with a significant part. All these countries, obviously, oil contributes a lot because it's an extractive industry. It has a very high return on investment, which is why it's known for bringing all this Dutch case disease. Because of that high return on investment, it's a major contributor to a lot of African countries' economies. So it's not, I don't think it's something that we are willing to let go just to save the environment. That's why we are seeing a lot of what seems to be low-key pushback to the transition. Yeah. So this is like telling the Americans to diversify from a war economy, which has been this has been running for a very long time.
Mm.
When your namesake was leaving office, he gave them a very colorful speech about how powerful the military industrial complex was becoming, and how the whole economy was sort of like being reoriented towards a war economy. And when you have an economy that's tailored towards war, you will always have wars.
Mm.
So now retransitioning that economy from a war economy into industrialization after they have shipped much of their industries away from the continent, away from their country, is going to take a very long time. And until then, conflicts are just going to pop up left, right, and center. And this is not the first time that. I'm drawing that example from transatlantic slavery.
Mm.
During the height of slavery in the U.S., especially in the South, slaves were considered property, and just like any properties, they were used as collaterals. And the U.S. basically went to, the Civil War was because there was a part of the country that wanted to get rid of slavery. There was part of the country that whose industry was heavily reliant on that slavery. So that means you are looking at a multi-billion dollar, if not multi-trillion dollar economy that was being threatened at the time.
Yeah.
So no one was willing to just toss away. Of course, there were a lot of moral questions associated to this, but if they went to war to protect enslaving others, I don't think you have African countries that will just say, you know what, let's just save the environment and, let's just close down all our oil industries. And that's not going to fly.
No, it's not going to happen.
It's
definitely not going to happen. And it's also going to be a discussion, Helmut, about the biggest thing is how the local content policy involvement takes place.
Yeah.
Now, before we end, basically, because I only have 20 seconds left just to add this on. we obviously will see a whole bunch, just for the listeners to know, a whole bunch of things happen between August and November this year.
Yeah.
But before we continue and before we end off, let's take the ad break and we come back after it.
Esira shisho. Yotari kukwathere opovoro kara uwasira ya kweni ochisho. Watuchi ithana basic mental health first aid course. Haiganjwa oshari chamhongi kwa mboka iri iyo iyo NHP. Watapewa unongo nonseo na kene una okutongorora omadidiriko ogopetameko igena sha nupiakadhi nenge omathidakano gopama viraviro kuchane omokatiko kumekoe nenge aniironga pamwe nangoe. Osho otapewa unongo kene una okuya kwathena nukuya pa ea bidhido igiri mwanjira. Omanga upiakadhi boka inauru darara. Kuyerere ounji na kene unokana uishangitha tarira po epanja yao yo nhp.com.na. E hangona maradura thano odhina okurandurwa. NHP rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You'll learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
And of course, that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place for me. Y'all have a good one.
My side, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your evening in our company with the next program to follow on after the break.